Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. A little later in this program, we'll say goodbye to a St. Louis Public Radio staffer who's become a favorite over the past year. But first, the ongoing story of cyberbullying. Two young Florida girls, aged 12 and 14, have been arrested in connection with the suicide death of 12-year-old Rebecca Sedgwick. She jumped off a silo after following online encouragement to take her own life, perhaps encouraged by as many more young girls than the two who have been charged in this case. The charge, by the way, is aggravated stalking. This kind of thing has happened before, most notably right in our own backyard. 7 years ago to this very day, 13-year-old Megan Meyer took her own life in St. Charles County as a result of online bullying. Since then, her mother, Tina, has been a tireless anti-bullying advocate through her Megan Meyer Foundation. Tina Meyer joins us in studio. Also here, Louise Lossos, Director of Curriculum for Confluence Academies, who has been actively engaged in the bullying issue. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Tina, I know this has to be a very tough day for you. 7 years ago hardly seems possible.
Yeah, you know, there are days that it feels like it never happened, and then there are days it feels like it happened that instant. And you know, on today's day, I decided to do a presentation. I decided to do something positive out of it versus it being a negative. And so while it is tough, you try to keep that focus of let's make a difference. And that's what I try to do to keep focused to move through.
How much positive has come from it?
You know, I think a lot more than some people see. I think that when we hear and talk about this topic, we want to see big things change. We all of a sudden want to see this, you know, when we state it, everything must change quickly. It takes time. We're talking about human behavior. We're talking about the way that we use electronics, that we interface. And so I think that small changes are happening. We're seeing students who are becoming more empowered. We are seeing that some of the social media sites out there, they are doing some things to make sure that they're stepping up some privacy issues. We are seeing schools that are now, maybe some because of the laws, but are taking more of a better approach, at least getting some things talked about within the schools. So there are some positives. Again, I look at small steps as a positive because one life to me is worth it. So in the overall scheme, we still have a lot of work to do.
And yet we read today that Facebook apparently is relaxing its privacy policy, which seems to be going in the opposite direction that I assume you would like it to go.
You know, I think it's really hard. Everybody has a button that they want to push that will make everything better. And through the social networking sites, you know, again, there's only so much that can be done unless they come to the house and they fingerprint and then they put a chip in you to know you're exactly who you are. It's really hard. So I think that they need to put things in place, especially to be able to report if there are issues. At the end of the day, we have teens and adults alike that put, you know, fake profiles, fake information out there, and it's almost impossible. So again, it's putting those guidelines out there, but it's really bringing awareness and educating the kids is really the most important thing, along with adults and educators.
Louise Lossos, what do you make of the Facebook policy, the new privacy policy?
It's an economic move. I think Facebook is worried about losing that teen audience to other social media sites, and they're trying to capture it. I think Tina's right. I think that if teens have wanted to do this, no privacy restrictions, no guidelines they put in place are going to stop it. When Mark Zuckerberg talks openly about having a Facebook profile for his dog, you know that their own policies don't necessarily hold any sway. And it's about informing schools and parents and students about how best to respond online and how to respond after. I think that Tina's efforts, she talks about small moves. I think after Megan's death 7 years ago, it put it in the forefront for schools and her efforts to place it in law to separate bullying and cyberbullying as related but different has forced schools, whether by law or by other reasons, to be more active and be more aware and hopefully not just reactive but proactive.
Well, people will probably remember your name, among
Absolutely.
Other things, because of your own issues with
mm-hmm.
Facebook. Just remind our audience what you went through.
Well, I had created a fake profile to try and counteract the rising tide of cyberbullying, threats, violence that resulted from that in my own school. And it probably at that time wasn't the right way to go. But as school administrators, we were trying to figure out how best to protect our students. And I probably didn't go about it the right way. And in the end, I lost my job as a result of it. But the bigger issue is, how do we keep our kids safe? There are lots of ways to go about it. School districts are trying many different things. I'm sure they're still trying my route. But, you know, it's about education and about responding when a student comes to you and says, my friend is being bullied, or I feel bullied, or a parent calls, that the schools have to take it seriously and do their due diligence. Not every time is it bullying, but enough time if you don't take every account seriously and listen. I think when you come down to it, it's about listening to the parents and about listening to the kids.
I know you're both familiar with the case that I alluded to in the introduction mm-hmm. in Florida, that unfortunate incident in which a 12-year-old lost her life. I'll start with you, Louise. What is your take on that, given all that's transpired over recent years?
Well, it's heartbreaking that we are still seeing suicides. The rate of teen suicide is just devastating, and the fact that these still occur. I'm encouraged that people are taking it seriously and that they are looking to prosecute if that's appropriate. Parents need to be aware. Parents aren't accountable for every one of their students' actions, but how do they respond when they hear? The fact that I hope it didn't take the news media, the pressure of social media, to push the prosecutors to action. You always worry that they're just reactive. But, you know, every time you hear another one of these, it brings back the memories of all that have gone in the past. And it's heartbreaking.
And Tina, I suppose it was particularly heartbreaking for you at this particular time.
You know, I think that what breaks my heart is not only just what that child was going through to have to feel in that desperate of a situation, but also knowing what her family and now what her friends and everybody, the whole entire ripple effect that happens after this. And I think that many times we hear about these stories and some of them take a life of their own and they're out there in the media and then we make a huge deal about it and then all of a sudden it goes away and it's until another tragedy happens. And I think that because the sheriff is, and I've met him before, he's had a lot of these high profile situations in his community, that I think that he does take this stuff very seriously. And, you know, while prosecuting and laws are not going to change the behaviors of every single person, at the end of the day, if we don't hold anybody accountable for their actions, then we have a society of where everybody can just do whatever they want. We have to make sure that if they're in place, we have to utilize them in the proper way, along with now educating and making sure that we're getting kids and parents to understand. And I think, you know, what I hear so much of is from kids is, they don't do anything about it. What's the big deal? So it's not like they're going to do anything. Yeah, we've got laws, but that doesn't mean anything. And we have to get that mentality for them to understand, no, these things are real, and it does affect a life. And so we have to make sure we start following our own procedures.
The sheriff that you mentioned is Sheriff Grady Judd, and he is particularly upset at the parents' involvement, the parents of the girls who are accused, or one of the girls in particular who's accused, because she was so outspokenly public with this whole incident on her Facebook page. And he would like to find a way to charge those parents with something. Not quite sure how to do that, but let's listen to what he says.
Well, do you know, right now there are no criminal charges that we can find. But if we could find a contributing to the dependency or delinquency of a child, we certainly would bring that charge, because I can tell you, the parents are in total denial. They don't think there's a problem here, and that is the problem. It's kind of like the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. That's what we have here. The parents are in denial, and they even let her have her Facebook access after she bullied this child and after they knew it. That's terrible. That's why we moved fast to lock their daughter up.
Louise Lassos, what do you think about that and about what he's saying?
Wow. I mean, that's very powerful. Parents play a role in their child's upbringing, having an active role in how their children are using cyberspace and social media sites and responding when they find their children are doing wrong. As an administrator, you know, discipline, similar to what Tina said, always has two components. There is the, how do we prevent this from happening in the future? How can we make better decision? And there's a consequence for their actions. As a parent, you would hope that when you bring it to the parent's attention, that they turn to their child and go, all right, what are you doing? Let's let's learn from this. You need to stop this. This is why. This is why. And the fact that the parents seem to be not just oblivious, but desensitized to it, that their little child could do no wrong or it must not be them, even with the evidence in front of them.
Tina, it seems to me that part of this may be generational. Oftentimes, the parents are not as intimate with the workings of things like Facebook and Twitter, and so they really have no clue as to what's going on or how to monitor it.
I think it's really hard for parents to keep up with what kids are doing. I mean, not only just the social media, but it's also the apps on their phones. You know, they can download these apps, and the parents have no clue what's going on. And I think this is a hard place to be, because as parents, you can be very vigilant. You can talk to them about it, but they sometimes make their own choices. Then you sometimes have the parents that then join in. They still have not grown up. They still, if that child said something about you, well, then you have the right to lash back. And then we have those parents that then just jump on board. Well, you have a right to do it. And so there's a fine line. I don't know the exact answer. I do know that with kids, we can get them and we can empower them. The adults, that's a harder thing to do. So that's where I always look at more of what can we do to educate the kids, get them to understand consequences, what the rules are, and try to really push that way, and then try to put the Band-Aids on us as adults.
You're listening to St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Louise, I know you are aware of a generational divide. You mentioned it off the air. Well, what's your feeling about that?
Well, I think we need to just acknowledge the fact that our children will always be three or four steps ahead of us on technology and social media.
Or more.
And that it is a constant struggle to stay up with what the children are doing. But that's where the relationship piece comes in. Are you talking to your children? Are you aware of what they're doing? Do you know their friends? What you do online should be no different than what you do face-to-face. And if the parents are involved and having these ongoing conversations, or grandparents or aunts and uncles, whoever is an important person in their life, then that should translate to whatever medium they're on, because we will never be able to stay up on all of what our children are doing. They've already started to move away from Facebook. They're into Instagram, into the next thing, and into the next thing. Twitter might be the worst of them all, because you just sort of fire it off and it's into the netherworld and it goes and goes and goes.
Yeah, in this case in Florida, I don't know if I've mentioned that, but there may be as many as 15 other young girls who could possibly be involved in the bullying of the young victim.
Well, I think that's part of the problem with cyberbullying. You know, when it's bullying face-to-face, it is bad enough because you're hearing it, you're seeing it happen within school, but you can go away from it. When it's cyberbullying, it starts in school or starts in a different place, and then all of a sudden it is just surrounds you. And when we talk to kids about, you know, there's a lot of adults that say, well, you know, they should just shut the account down. They just should block the person. They, you know, get away from the cell phone. Go watch some TV. Go outside. Go take a walk. That's easier said than done to them. Kids carry this with them to the restroom, to bed, to everywhere that they go. It's how they interact. And so when you shut that part down to them, it's literally shutting down their world. It's not quite that easy. So it is something that we really try to get, again, it's teaching adults to understand what kids are going through and how is the best way to intervene and talk to them openly, get them to understand.
Almost all of the cases that I'm familiar with involve young girls. Why is that?
I think girls are more vicious. It's boys' rumors, jealousy. It's over those three consistent things that it just literally they're trying to just fit in. And if they can fit in with a group and they can start a rumor about somebody, they don't like the way she dresses or her family or she talked to this boy or that she got something that they didn't get or made a better grade, then it's how dare her. And so it's getting these other groups, kids together, and if they feel that power, they feel empowered to now go take it out against her because they have all this support. And girls, I talk to them all the time about we struggle with self-esteem ourselves, but yet we're tearing apart every fiber that we are on each other instead of trying to build each other up. And so it is something every school I go to, it's girls tenfold over boys.
They're more social than boys at that particular stage, the preteen years, the early teen years.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. But they are in another way, they do it sneakier. They're more quiet about it. They do it subtly. No to the teacher. No, no, no. I would never do that. But behind their back, they're rolling their eyes. They're, you know, so they've understand a way to be able to get it, but on the outside look like they would never do anything to harm anybody.
I have to take a break now. Louise, I want to get your take on that when we come back, but I have to take the break. We're talking about the cyberbullying that has become so prevalent in recent years, recent case in Florida, and many people are familiar with a young girl committed suicide because she was bullied online. We'll come back and continue the conversation. My guests in studio are Tina Meyer of the Megan Meyer Foundation. She lost her daughter 7 years ago to this day as a result of online bullying. Louise Lassus is also with us. She's the director of curriculum for the Confluence Academies. We'll be back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll be continuing our conversation on cyberbullying with Tina Meyer and Louise Lassus in just a moment. But here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Lawmakers from Missouri and Illinois are explaining their votes both for and against ending the federal government shutdown. And as that shutdown ends, what does that mean for the Missouri National Guard and other federal employees in the state of Missouri? And the mayors along the Missouri River are meeting today in Memphis for an economy summit, that is, where they will unveil an economic profile of the river. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation. We have been talking about the fact that so many of these cases involve young girls, 12, 14, 15, 16 years old, Louise Lassus. You're a teacher. I once had a teacher tell me that the worst creature on planet Earth is an eighth grade girl. Do you agree?
I don't know the worst creature on planet Earth.
I think we know what she meant.
I do. Girls are in some ways more openly vicious than boys. My experience has shown is when you have a conflict between two boys, you can resolve it very quickly. Typically, you tell them to stop, knock it off. You might need to do a little bit more, but once they're done and it's behind them. With girls, not only do the girls, does it seem to keep percolating, but then their friends keep it percolating. And you start with two, and the next thing, it's like that old commercial, they told two people and they told two people. And it just, it just gets wider and wider. Sort of the case in Florida you're talking about started with two, now that we're at 15. And it's very difficult. When Facebook first started, all the schools have filters on their computers, were required by law. And so it was easy for educators to say, well, they're not doing it here because they couldn't do it. And then smartphones came on. And smartphones don't need to use your internet access. And now they can do it there. And so you can post something at lunch that someone's responding to right after school or during eighth grade math class. And girls, there's just something about that age where you would think that we would be supporting each other and building each other up, and too often we build each other up by tearing each other down.
I want to invite our listening audience into this conversation at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can also send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air. Now, lest I be accused of being sexist on this and pointing at young girls, what about boys? And I understand what you've just said, that they kind of handle things themselves and don't get into this sort of thing in the same way. But they must be involved in it as well.
Well, where we're finding, I think, the issue with cyberbullying in boys is with our population that's either gay or questioning. When you hear about suicides of a young male boy, usually it's often anyway related to accusations that they're gay or that they are gay or they're questioning. And there's been, the rate of suicide among gay and questioning youth is, I think, three times the regular population. So it almost goes back to the female thing, though, again. They're, you know, being accused of weak and not manly and all sorts of other type of things when a kid is still trying to figure out who they are and what they are. And so I think that's where we see it more on the male front.
Tina, I know you do a lot of workshops and have been doing it for a good long while. What are you finding in this regard with regard to the male side of this equation?
I think that the males are quietly hurting many times. I think that we see them trying to act tough, trying to act masculine. Everything's fine. They can handle it. And then when you get them in a smaller group setting and you start talking to them and you ask them, where do you go when you are struggling on any issue? I don't. I hold it into myself. I hold it. I don't talk to anybody about it. Well, what if you really needed to talk to a trusted adult? Who would you go to? No one. Why? Well, because I should be able to handle it on my own. And so a lot of it is seen as, you know, I can handle it, toughen up, suck it up, you can do it. And I think that we're seeing major, I see at least a lot of issues with boys feeling that they should handle it on their own, and they are struggling. I talked to a boy a couple of weeks ago, a freshman, and he has four older brothers that were into sports and doing really well, a father who's in the Marines, and he is struggling. He does not do sports and struggling with other people talking about his sexual orientation. He's not, and he wanted to end his life. He said, I can't go talk to anybody about it. My dad won't understand. My brothers won't understand. Everybody else. And so I think we really are seeing issues with boys trying to get them to open up in the right way is what I'm seeing quite a bit of.
Mm-hmm. I have some figures here that are interesting. We should get out there for people to digest. 16% of these are figures from various sources. 16% of high school kids are bullied. And it may be even higher than that because some kids don't really report that they are. About 6% of kids from 6th grade through the 12th grades are bullied. So there we go.
Right. And sometimes when they take the surveys, the thing that's really started to happen over the past couple of years is middle school and high school kids don't see it as bullying or cyberbullying. They think of that as like these tragic stories. They hear it of the major stuff. So when you say, have you been bullied? They're like, well, no. And then you have to start asking them other questions about rumors or isolation, mm-hmm. or, you know, somebody tagging your picture. If you ask them in those terms, they get it, but they don't get it when you ask those other two words.
Louise, one of the most disturbing aspects of this, in my mind, and I'm sure I'm not alone in this, is the fact that they take such dramatic steps. Mm-hmm. I mean, they go from 0 to 60, from being concerned to killing themselves. I mean, that's the most dramatic step and the most final step that any – why that leap, do you think?
That's a great question, and we see it among teenagers. They don't have the maturity to know that they might not have the resilience to know they can get through it, or they may not see an end to it. And so if they don't think it's ever going to end, then what are they going to do? And so they take a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And if they would ever talk with someone, that adult could help them work through that. It is heartbreaking, and we know that suicides beget suicides, that you hear about it on the news or you know someone who has, and they go, something that might not have been a real choice all of a sudden goes, oh, well, I could do that, and I could get this attention, and it would show them.
Go ahead, Tina.
I think that there is that concern out in the media world, and talking about how do we portray these situations so that we don't have the copycat, especially talking within schools to not do huge memorials, mm-hmm. and make a huge issue of it. But we also realize that talking about it in the proper ways, that it really, the hope is to be able to give them information now to step up and speak out about it and talk about it and reach out for help. And I think that with kids who do attempt suicide or complete, many times it is the pain and they don't see the other issues that are happening. And we talk about, there's a specialist who studies why do people complete suicide. And he does not consider it impulsive. A lot of people say it's impulsive behaviors. He states that you have certain conditions and things that are around you. And then when you have other things, such as we realize that people who have mental illness, diagnosed or undiagnosed, usually other contributing factors happen when they attempt or complete suicide. It's not just bullying itself or just cyberbullying itself. And so when you have different things that start merging together and they don't see an out and they don't feel that they have that pathway to speak to somebody about it, they hold it in and they sometimes feel that the pain's too much and unfortunately take drastic steps.
Louise, are high school counselors adequately trained to deal with the situation? Should a student come and complain about this sort of thing?
You know, the high school counselors have to have a lot of education and a lot of experience. Are they all perfectly trained? No, they can always use more. But I do think that high school counselors are prepared for that and do know how to handle the kids and do know the questions to ask. Do you have a plan? Do you have the means? Do you have someone else you can talk to? I would think that any high school counselor would welcome the opportunity to talk to a kid before it's too late.
Right. And of course, parents come into the equation, as we've already
Absolutely.
Discussed. And are they trained? Probably not.
No. I mean, and I think that's a lot of what Tina is doing.
Sure.
Is I've been on her website, which is really just amazing, just the resources and the guidance. And I looked at your calendar, and you do a lot of – she does a lot of parent events at night in more and more school districts. Parents – I've talked to many parents. They are at a loss. And you say, well, have you tried this or have you tried that? It's like, well, I don't want to infringe on my child's privacy, or I don't want to get too involved in X, Y, and Z. And you have to remind them that they're children. And, you know, their privacy has its limits, and it stops really right where the parent stands.
We just lost a call, unfortunately, from a Mark who's driving on Highway 55 and was on a cell phone. But the question he wanted to ask, and I'll put it to you, Tina, is what sort of literature and resources are out there available to parents to deal with situations like this?
I think that there are a lot. I think that they can go to their school and see one, what the school has on literature. We have a lot of nonprofits out, and just even in St. Louis, that have information and brochures on it. I think there's not one place that has everything. They can contact our office. We do give many different resources that we've kept, from how to deal with situations happening in school. We have steps on what parents need to look for. We have steps for what kids can do, what educators can do. So they can contact us, but there are many different resources within St. Louis. But I would start with the school, or start looking at our website where we can refer them to other places. But I do agree with what she said. Parents are petrified of this topic. They're worried about their kids. And so when we have parent nights, unfortunately, not the vast majority show up. It's very few. But I explained to the schools that if it's a topic that's scary, then we don't want to deal with it unless we absolutely have to. And that's why we take the small steps.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I always would tell parents is, if your child's there, you need to be there. If your child's on Facebook, you need to be on Facebook. And the beauty of the internet, even though we're talking about sort of the downside, is Google it. I mean, Google, how do I do X? And a lot of really fabulous resources are out there. Or just read the story on the Florida Teen. There are links at the bottom of where to go and how to get help.
And resources in school, counselors, they're very busy people, but they have to make time for this.
And they do. When the school counselors I've worked with, 20, 30 school counselors, they're all amazing. And there are a lot of things they have to do that they, you know. But when an issue arises, they drop everything and they will spend the day with one student if that's what's necessary.
That's good. We're talking about cyberbullying, of course. My guests in studio are Tina Meyer of the Megan Meyer Foundation. That's named for her daughter, Megan, who took her own life 7 years ago to this very day as a result of cyberbullying. Also with me in studio is Louise Lassos, Director of Curriculum for the Confluence Academies. Let's go to the phone and bring in Diane, calling from St. Louis. Diane, you've been very patient. Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm not minimizing at all children, cyberbullying, but it's often left out of the conversation adults with cyberbullying. My daughter was 25, and adults know how to even do more detrimental things. And somebody put lies on about my daughter on a website called thedirty.com, which is completely illegal. I mean, completely legal, I'm sorry. And the problem is, if somebody, you know how so many companies today are checking into your background and looking up your Facebook and Googling your name before they hire you. And that, they cannot hire you because you have some lie on about what you've done or what you're doing. And luckily with my daughter, she has a nickname, so they put it under nickname. But, so she's okay in that sense, but it's something we thought about. And also at that point in time, she'd been date raped, and she was under a very high stress or highly dangerous pregnancy. And we tried taking this girl to court to get her to stop it, and there's nothing you can do. Absolutely nothing. This is completely legal for these people to do this.
Diane, thank you so much for the call. You raised another part of this issue, which is an important one, and both of these ladies with me in studio are just nodding in affirmation. Do you want to comment, either of you, on that, Dina?
I think we hear quite a bit in our foundation. We get calls about the adult situation also, that this does not just stop at the teen years. It absolutely happens. I think the hardest thing is that we have many resources for what to do with teens, but when it gets into an adult, it's kind of like, well, come on, you know, aren't you grown up enough? You know, just ignore it. Don't worry about it. But it truly can affect, like she's talking about, your jobs, your college, many different things.
Marriages,
absolutely. And I think that we do have laws in the state of Missouri that are used for internet harassment and internet stalking. Senate Bill 818 that was put into place back in August of 2008, which states that if you use the internet repeatedly to threaten, annoy, harass, stalk another person, you can be charged as a juvenile and as an adult. The problem is that if it does not fall under that, then, you know, or the threshold is not high enough, they're not getting prosecuted. And then it can leave people like this feeling like nothing can be done. And it's very, very frustrating.
You've been fairly outspoken on this. You have concerns that judges and prosecutors are not perhaps, what's the word I'm looking for here? Not as
doing what they need to be doing.
Yeah,
there's my answer. And it's not to, and again, I am not there to lash on anybody. I believe that their jobs are hard. I believe they try to do the best that they can do. But at the end of the day, if we have laws and these things have been done, it's not just, oh, well, it hasn't happened in a couple of months. And so now that, you know, we'll just push that away because we have bigger cases to handle. At the end of the day, we have to start prosecuting, because I just sat there in a training 2 weeks ago with 20 different police departments. I asked each one of them, have you filed, there are school resource officers, have you filed these issues? Have any of these gotten past the prosecuting attorney's desk? None. None of them. And these had all gotten to a point where they had to subpoena records. They've got families who are distraught, kids who have moved out of school, who have attempted, you name it, because of cyberbullying situations. They show that it's been repeated. And it does not get past the prosecuting attorney's desk. And it's frustrating on all fronts. And that's where I think that it's really getting the prosecuting attorneys and the judges together and the police departments to try to figure out what are the best ways to handle this? How do we handle it? And I think it's really learning from each other. But at the end of the day, they have to be taken seriously.
And just to go back to what we were talking about a moment ago, however, you're a high-profile person now as a result of all the work that you have done. Have you ever been harassed online as a result of your high visibility?
Well, you know what? Absolutely. Yes. I mean, there are comments that you can have on any story, anywhere. I choose not to look at them. And to give you an idea, I was just at a school a couple of weeks ago, a local private high school. And we have surveys that we give, post surveys afterwards. And, you know, we talk about how I feel I'm a pretty strong person. I don't listen to what other people say. I focus on the positive. But I looked at the teacher surveys. And now these were anonymous. And these teacher surveys were rude. I mean, not constructive criticism. It was rude. Inappropriate things that were said. And you sit back and you look and you start to think, are you serious? I mean, really? And so, yes, we do. We get comments and questions and negative things said. At the end of the day, I truly, truly focus on the positive. And if I can move forward and affect the change with 50% of the public and 50% of the naysayers, I ignore the naysayers and I move forward to the others. And so we do receive it every day.
Louise, are you surprised to hear that?
I'm not. As a high school principal in the past, you make decisions that are in the best interest of the school, of the students, and there are going to be people who disagree with them. And I was subject to a Facebook campaign at one point because they didn't like a decision I'd made. And like with many decisions, you can't discuss it. And it's hard. I've been the subject of Post-Dispatch articles, and comments are horrible. I mean, you have to, it's hard not to, but any, and not just stories on me, any story, you go into the comment section and people feel free to just say things they would never say to you face to face or never. I mean, it's just, it's awful. There's no sort of civility And sometimes people attach their names to it, which I find astounding. Mm-hmm. But the anonymity, you have to use now on the post, you have to use Facebook logins, but that doesn't seem to stop people. And, racial sexism, it's just awful.
Let's take one more call, as time will allow for one more, I think. Anne is joining us. Anne, go ahead, but please make it a quick comment, please.
Hi. I was at the middle school last week, and I took a picture actually at the parking lot, and you kind of touched on that. The parking lot was basically empty, and it just shows you that parents didn't show up. And if parents don't show up, then they can't learn this information. You kind of just touched on what I wanted to comment on. You know, girls can barely look at themselves and see a zit in the mirror and they freak out. And here we expect them to see a comment about themselves. I mean, you ladies, I'm not sure how old you are, but I'm 45. And if I were to read comments about myself, oh my gosh. I mean, I can't be on Facebook anymore because I would look at somebody's house who I knew in high school and I would still go, oh my gosh, her living room's nicer than mine.
Right.
I think to put an iPhone in a teenage girl, even a 12-year-old, sixth grader, a girl's hand, and let her go on Instagram and take pictures of herself and see the comments that people put about her, I just think she's not capable to sit back and say, you know what, I'm okay with that comment. I'm a strong person, and I'm okay with that. It's not possible. And I just think to allow a girl to have an Instagram account, Facebook, MySpace, whatnot, is just wrong. And it's she just doesn't have the capability to walk herself through it.
And I'm going to stop you there because our time is getting away. But thank you so much for the call. We can hear in Anne's voice the fervor, the emotion that she has with this subject.
Right. And I agree with her. I do think, children are not developed at this age to be able to comprehend and cope with all of the things that are happening. We realize that peer inclusion is the most important thing for kids. And if they feel a way to be included, they're going to do whatever they can do to be included in that. And I think that for girls, we struggle with self-esteem every day, and it is something that's pushed out into the forefront. And I think it's very hard. It's hard as adults, but it's really hard as teens saying, don't worry about it, you're fine. That's not the answer. We really have to listen and get them to start vocalizing a little bit more. But it's a scary situation.
Louise, do you want to put a bottom line on it from your perspective?
A bottom line on it? I don't think it matters what age you are. When someone attacks you viciously online, it hurts.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, we'll leave it there and hope we are reporting less and less of this sort of thing. But no one seems very encouraged that it's going to stop anytime soon as long as all of these technologies are available to young people.
Hopefully our elementary kids will start seeing that change when we really start working with them to teach them the proper ways. But right now with middle school and high school, we're putting Band-Aids on and trying to do the best we can do. And hopefully over time we'll start catching up. Is the hope.
That's Tina Meyer of the Tina Meyer Foundation. You know the name. Her daughter committed suicide 7 years ago on this day, on this date. Thank you, Tina, so much for being with us. Keep up the good work. Louise Lassos, thank you so much for
thank
being
you.
With us from the Confluence Academies. It's been nice talking to you as well.
You as well.
We'll be back in just a moment to say farewell to a colleague who is moving on. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.